earlier this year, a young man named Adalberto Espinoza Sierra was killed by law enforcement officers in a downtown Wilmington parking deck. The Wilmington Police Department claimed the shooting was in self-defense, and the district attorney later determined that no charges would be brought against the police officers or sheriff's deputies involved. In part one of our series, we spoke to Adalberto Espinoza Sierra's family to get a clearer picture of who he was as a person. And harking back to one point Adalberto's sister, Genesis Espinoza Sierra, made in part one of this story back in May, it's important to remember victims for the life they had, and not solely the events leading to their death. So in part one, we toured Adalberto's bedroom and heard a lot about his home and personal life from his sister Genesis and his mother Elizabeth Sierra Navarro. In this episode, we'll be hearing from them again as they discuss their understanding of the events that took place on March 8th. We'll also hear from Adalberto's father, Adalberto Espinoza Maldonado, who we'll refer to as Adalberto Sr. for the sake of our listeners, about police accountability and the family's initial review of the remnants of Adalberto's car after the officer-involved shooting. And I want to note that later on in this episode, I'll be going in depth about the footage pulled from law enforcement's body-worn camera of the shooting that was only shown to the media. Before we hear the family's account of what happened, let's briefly go over the basic details of the incident that led to Espinoza Sierra's death. According to WPD, task force officers, along with deputies from the New Hanover County Sheriff's Office, responded to gunshots heard near the 100 block of Market Street at a parking garage. Once officers entered the parking garage, they located one man, later identified as 26-year-old David Corpus, suffering from a gunshot wound, and he was later transported to the hospital. Several witnesses at the scene directed law enforcement toward a possible suspect. Then they approached a nearby vehicle, briefly detaining the occupants without incident. Now, this point is something that we'll revisit later on in this episode and we'll touch on briefly. But back to the incident. So soon, another man in a blue Dodge Challenger, who officers said matched a suspect's description, came traveling down the parking garage toward the exit. According to WPD, the officers attempted to make contact with the driver of the vehicle, who was Adalberto. Here's audio from a video taken by a bystander that was later shared with the news and posted on social media. Bystanders' footage of the incident appears to show Espinoza Sierra continuing to accelerate forward as police officers chase behind his vehicle, demanding that he stop. Seconds later, the vehicle veers around the corner and, according to police reports, struck another vehicle while narrowly missing several officers. And in a matter of seconds, officers began firing at Adalberto, later saying they sought to protect themselves and civilians. One officer would later testify that he seen Espinoza Sierra reaching for the center console. A stolen firearm was later found between that console and the seat, though at the time of the shooting, the officer didn't say that he saw a weapon. According to WPD's report, officers began performing life-saving measures on Adalberto shortly after. But after being shot 12 times, Adalberto sadly died. Most of this was obstructed from view in bystander footage. And because body-worn camera footage isn't considered a public record in the state of North Carolina, meaning no one can go online to review officer body camera footage or simply submit a records request for copies of that footage, there wasn't much the family knew for sure about Adalberto's shooting in the weeks following his death. All they could do was piece together glimpses captured on bystander video to try to get a full picture. And as a matter of fact, when an individual dies during an arrest and that individual's death is captured on a body-worn camera, one of the only ways next of kin can review that footage is by requesting the disclosure of the recordings from the relevant law enforcement agency. Then, that agency must file a petition in the Superior Court of the county where the recordings of the incident were captured. But all of this is contingent on the agency's approval before the ball can even start rolling. And as of yet, the family hasn't gone through that process. The investigation into the officer-involved shooting was headed up by the State Bureau of Investigation, which in June concluded their look into this case. Prior to the release of the SBI's findings, the family relied on whatever information they could get from Eldeberto's friends who witnessed what happened. And here's Elizabeth Sierra Navarro, Eldeberto's mother, explaining what the family knew about the incident that will help provide extra context to the results of the SBI's investigation.
My son is leaving the nightclub with four friends. Well, three friends plus him makes four. It was one of his friend's birthday. I understand that a guy who is a friend of his and who was there with them had reserved a table.
Luego dice un chico que es amigo de él que venía con ellos ahí, que ellos venían.
They drove there and left the car in the parking lot supposedly because there are cameras there for security purposes. Then, shortly after, they went up to the second floor. Now, this is not where I'm entirely clear on the details. Apparently, there was another group of kids there, including a girl. And one of the guys from my son's group made a rude remark to her. She was offended, as was a friend of hers, and that's when they started to argue.
According to one witness, who spoke on record with WWAY reporter Brian Alonzo, and only went by her first name, Stella, this heated engagement took place on the first floor of the parking garage. It's unclear from that witness's statements or from police reports whether this was a physical altercation, but she said that not too long after this engagement started, it soon dissipated, and those involved actually apologized to each other. And this is the family's understanding as well, according to their matriarch, Elizabeth.
Everything is supposed to have been fine at that point. Afterward, my son went up to the fourth floor. From there, I don't know who spoke to him or how my son ended up turning back.
But then things escalated again, and this time things definitely got physical, as she continues to explain.
And when he returns, or at least that's what we assume, I'm not entirely sure which way he went, but he heads down to the second floor. Whether he took the elevator or the stairs, the assumption is that he took the elevator. Because if you watch the video where the boxer is striking my son, he is standing right next to the elevator as he renders him unconscious, a professional boxer.
That same witness who spoke to WWAY believed that the young woman informed her boyfriend of the insults that had taken place. And her boyfriend is believed to be a friend of David Corpus, the man who was later shot. But by the time the first altercation ended, her boyfriend and Corpus made it to the second story of the parking garage, confronting Eldeberto's group about the altercation that took place moments earlier. A video of the second altercation surfaced after news broke of the shooting. It involved Sierra's lifelong friend, 22-year-old Rafael Martinez, and Corpus, who the Espinosa Sierras believed to be a professional MMA fighter. Now, we reached out to Corpus for confirmation on this following his treatment in the hospital, but he declined to respond. As for Martinez, he was later arrested and placed on an Immigration and Customs Enforcement detainer while in custody, according to WWAY. And the family declined to speak on record with us to confirm this or provide any updates. But as of writing this, New Hanover County Sheriff's Office's website shows Martinez is in their custody awaiting trial under a $300,000 secured bond. And as to why Martinez may have shot Corpus, his family told WWAY that he did it to protect Edilberto. And this was echoed by Edilberto's family, who were distraught by the footage of what appeared to be Corpus physically assaulting their family member. But since Edilberto wasn't the one who fired the shot at Corpus, his family maintains his innocence and believes that his friend Rafael was acting in his defense. And here's Genesis to explain this.
He literally would always tell my mom this. He would be like, I never want to fight. I don't want to fight, but people provoke my friends. And, you know, I'm not going to just leave my friends to dry. And, you know, obviously I still feel for Rafael and I understand why he did what he did.
And she believes that the officers involved should have tried more non or less lethal ways to stop Edilberto's car after the fact so they could begin their investigation without any more bloodshed.
He should have, but if you know, if you were going to shoot, you should be trained to shoot non-lethally, especially if there's six officers versus one vehicle that's unarmed and not shooting at you or actively threatening you. Because, you know, it's just, it leaves a lot of trauma behind for the family. You know what I mean? And that's what I don't understand, I guess. Like, in my perspective, I can't view that and, like, understand where they're coming from. It feels racist, you know what I mean? It does feel like that, and, you know, maybe I truly do want to believe that in their hearts they are not, because I really want to believe that people have good in them. And it would just be an easier pill to swallow to see it as a mistake, but it doesn't feel like that.
In the weeks following Edilberto's death, the family was on the hunt for their own answers and even started an online petition calling for the release of the body camera footage and the names of the officers involved, and also charges brought against those officers. However, last month, District Attorney Jason Smith, who covers New Hanover and Pender counties, determined, based on the SBI's report, that no criminal charges would be brought against any of the officers or deputies involved. Smith also announced that the family is welcome to review the entirety of the SBI's report, which includes portions of the body camera footage, and he's also welcoming the family to speak to the lead case agent at the SBI, which the family says they'd be open to, but only with a lawyer present. Let's turn our attention to Edilberto Sr., whose mission is guided by one question. That's how to get justice for his son.
There was no justification for the measures they employed. They should have been better prepared to substantiate the actions they took.
As I mentioned earlier, on June 24th, DA Jason Smith announced the findings of the SBI's investigation into Edilberto's death. It was determined that no criminal charges would be brought against the officers or deputies involved. New Hanover County Sheriff Ed McMahon and Wilmington Police Chief Ryan Zudema both maintain that officers and deputies acted reasonably and that their use of deadly force was necessary because of the perceived threat that Espinosa Sierra posed at that moment. However, the footage of the incident won't be released to the public, though the DA did allow members of the media to review portions of the body camera footage at a press conference. Now, as we get into the details of the body camera footage, I'd like to remind listeners that this portion of our story does contain some details regarding Adalberto's death that some may find disturbing. The DA presented 4 video clips from multiple law enforcement personnel's vantage points as they responded to the shots fired at the parking garage on March 8th. And as described by the DA, it was definitely a very hectic scene when officers arrived. One video showed an officer running up to the second floor of the garage. Bystanders were telling this particular officer to look for a guy in a blue Challenger and that it was a Hispanic man with curly black hair and blood on his face. Then the officer, already on alert and with his firearm out and pointed, approached Adalberto as he was sitting in his car and waiting behind a line of other vehicles that wrapped all the way up at least a couple of floors of the parking garage. The officer shouted as he was approaching Adalberto's car. And this is a direct quote that I jotted down while reviewing the video. He shouted, quote, "Put your fucking hands up. I will fucking shoot you." The footage went on to show Adalberto with the window rolled down with blood on his face, seemingly telling the officers that it wasn't him or he may have been trying to point them to the actual suspect. And to be clear, because Adalberto was speaking pretty quietly, it was hard to make out the exact words he was saying. And what struck me, and maybe other reporters as well, was Adalberto's surprisingly calm demeanor in that moment. His body language suggested, to me at least, that he was sort of over the whole situation and was just focused on getting out of the garage. The footage then showed Adalberto rolling up his window and speeding off around the line of cars and down the ramp. The officer, whose body cam footage we were reviewing, then chased after the car on foot. Adalberto didn't get far before veering into the side of a truck, damaging it on its side, and then hitting another car directly in front of him immediately afterwards, stopping his blue Challenger in its place. Another body cam recording that was taken from the driver's side angle of Espinosa Sierra's car showed the first shot being fired. It happened right when Adalberto smashed into the truck before getting stuck behind the other vehicle. After seeing the footage, this raised some questions for me as a viewer of whether that officer fired because he was startled by the sound of the cars colliding or if he genuinely believed his life to be in peril. There was what looked like to me a brief moment of hesitation from the other officers surrounding the car. Either that or it just took them a beat before they all began firing. Police body cam footage also showed one officer standing a short distance away from Adalberto's car as he shot directly at the driver's side window several times. The task force members fired a total of 62 rounds. In those moments, Adalberto's window was beginning to roll down a couple of inches, and his tires continued to screech until everything, the screeching and the gunfire, came to a halt. Adalberto Sr. referred to the bystander footage once more to note what officers could have done better.
There's a video demonstrating that, had the police officers communicated with one another, my son's death could have been prevented. The footage, spanning about 40 seconds, shows a group of officers at the scene where the boxer, David, had been shot. The young woman with him was yelling at them that the perpetrator was Rafa. So they already had the name of the person they needed to find. If during those 40 seconds, they had simply communicated with the other officers stationed on the street, they could have intercepted the man who ultimately killed my son.
And you just heard Eldeberto Sr. mention the name Rafa. That's the nickname of Rafael Martinez. Based on what the family heard from witnesses' accounts, a few people tried to direct officers to Martinez as they arrived on the scene, which WPD did allude to in their March 10th press release. However, from what was shown in the police body cam footage, bearing in mind the media was only shown excerpts and not the full recordings, it was hard to make out whether bystanders gave a name to the officers whose body cam footage the clips were pulled from. But we do know that they were definitely given a description of the alleged suspect. Also, I'm not sure how much the officers interacted prior to responding to the shootings at the garage, but based on my interpretation of what was shown in the videos, it appeared that they each arrived at the scene one by one and made their way towards other task force members once they were in the garage. And from what I observed, it appeared communication may have been sparse between the officers in the heat of the moment, and there even could have been a few who were not fully informed of the details of the situation as they were heading into it. Not to say there was no communication at all amongst the task force, but one instance that was caught on camera appeared to show that not all of them were in the loop. As I said in the beginning of this episode, we'd address one point that was included in WPD's press release, and that's how officers approached a nearby vehicle, briefly detaining the occupants without incident. Now, one clip from the body cam footage displayed just how rapidly this situation was evolving for the responding officers, which led to one incident of what appears to be a WPD officer entering the garage through the stairwell and immediately running up to a car full of young African Americans saying, quote, "Stop the fucking car." And at this point, he already had his gun out and pointed at the occupants of that vehicle. A bystander walking past at the time told that officer that it was a Hispanic man that he needed to be looking for. And then the officer told them that they were free to go. The family maintains that law enforcement's reaction was excessive and believed that police may have realized they had the wrong person soon after the incident. Eldeberto Sr. shared with me that they ran into WECT reporter J.C. Caldwell at the parking garage the day after the shootings, and he said their discussion definitely raised questions.
She told me, though she didn't record it, that what she had understood or what she had been told was that they had made a mistake regarding him. However, this was supposedly handled discreetly. It is unclear if the mix-up involved the car, yet there are many cars of that make and in many different colors. And the license plates and the names of the individuals involved are all different.
Genesis says that law enforcement may have confused the shooting at the garage with a completely unrelated shooting that occurred downtown the same night.
From our understanding, what the lady from Channel 6 says is that he had nothing to do with that shooting, and that's what the police told her. From our understanding, the way that she was, like, basically told. Allegedly, what they had told her, and she didn't film this, is that they had gotten the wrong person simply because of his vehicle, that the vehicle matched the description of another shooting that had happened downtown that he was not involved with.
I reached out to Caldwell for comment on this, and she confirmed that she did indeed run into the Espinosa Sierra family at the parking deck. And she said police told her that Eldeberto matched Martinez's description, who was the person they were actually trying to look for. Other than that, Caldwell doesn't recall speaking off the record with the police extensively that day. But Genesis also says at one point, officers told the family they were looking for a suspect of African-American descent.
Yeah, and then the other description that they say he matched the suspect for, it was a black man who had killed allegedly his girlfriend. And that kind of puzzled us, too, because my brother was very pale. I think they found out after, so they shot first and asked questions later.
For context, the shooting Genesis is referring to took place in the 1300 block of Dawson Street less than an hour before police responded to the shooting at the parking garage. The shooter in this incident, 46-year-old Marvin Singleton, allegedly shot and killed 26-year-old Demetria Ingram. Singleton was arrested 3 days later, while Rafael Martinez, who is the alleged shooter in this incident, was arrested 2 days after the fact. I also reached out to both agencies for confirmation and have yet to hear back from them on this, as of recording. And when DA Jason Smith was asked whether law enforcement confirmed whether they did have the wrong person after the fact or not, Smith said he couldn't comment on any previous shootings, citing the North Carolina State Bar's Rules of Professional Conduct 3.6 and 3.8, which relate to trial publicity. In defense of the actions Edilberto took on the night of his death, the family believes that he was suffering from head trauma obtained from the fight, and that this could have impaired his decision-making at the time police were apprehending him. His sister says that it feels like officers are painting her brother as a threat and are attempting to incriminate him further by making their actions seem justified. But once Edilberto's car was returned to the family, to them, the officer's actions seemed anything but. During the family's initial exam of the car, they notice a bullet hole through the headrest on the driver's side, but not one tire was shot flat, leading them to believe that officers made no effort to shoot non-lethally. While visiting their home, I spoke with Edilberto's uncle, Selvin Espinosa, who you heard from in the last episode, and he wonders, after getting to examine the car up close, why the officer's first reaction was to shoot.
I think there should be different protocols. Or the ammo is being protocol set up for them. You got to do this first. Then you, another step is this and this and this. And like I say, I mean, they could have shot the tires. For me, it was like they don't know what to do. They was not trained right, or I mean, I don't know what, they were not in the right mind. I mean, because we count what, 23 shots?
By we, he means himself and Genesis, who were tasked with observing the car and collecting as much information as they could from it. After the release of the SBI's report, it turns out that the number of bullets fired was about three times that amount. Selvin says if the officers could have pepper sprayed first, or at least just fired a single shot at the tires, then it could have allowed his nephew to see another day and avoid putting others in jeopardy.
We got to go through, I mean, so many things to get to see the car, and yeah, we count 23 shots. So that means they crossfire. So I think it's more dangerous what they did, what they should do.
Edilberto Sr. agrees with this.
Porque no pudo... pudieron haber evitado la muerte de mi hijo, disparándole a las llantas.
Why couldn't they? Couldn't they have prevented my son's death by shooting at his tires?
During the DA's press conference last month, it was noted that according to WPD's policy, officers are actually not allowed to shoot at a suspect's vehicle in order to disable it. And there's nothing that outright prohibits deputies from firing at a suspect's vehicle to stop it. However, NHCSO's policy authorizes the use of deadly force when preventing an escape. Going back to WPD's policy, which also states that shooting at the operator of the vehicle is also prohibited unless the driver poses a significant threat. WPD's use of force policy was last updated in May of last year. D.A. Jason Smith, Sheriff McMahon, and Chief Zudema all concluded that the task force members acted within the parameters of their use of force policies, even alerting Edilberto that their intentions were to shoot, which is also written in WPD's and NHCSO's policies. the family believes the loss of their loved one warrants at least a small look into some of those rules. Or as Adalberto Sr. says, at least more of an effort on law enforcement's part to determine whether de-escalating a hostile situation is possible before resorting to lethal means.
The police today think they are gods who can kill people with impunity. But they were mistaken, because Jesus and God, who is in the heavens, placed good people in my path. And that is why we are here today. Thanks also to the person recording me right now and to the TV stations, Channel 6 and all the others, as well as all the activists and everyone else who has helped. It is because God has touched their hearts. They know that my son was innocent and that he should not have been killed. They could have used other methods.
Despite the ultimate decision not to release the names of the officers or the body cam footage, which, again, under state law, would have to be requested from the sheriff's office and WPD, he wants this information to be released to their family.
Well, what I want is for the police to finally release the names of those involved. We also want the body camera footage from the officers, as well as the video footage from the cameras located in the parking lot.
As of recording this episode, the names of the task force members have not been released, but WPD spokesperson Ronald Evans confirmed in an email that their threat assessment to determine whether to release the names of the officers involved is underway, noting that some of the results they've seen so far have yielded some concerning threats to the officers and the agency as a whole. NHCSO has not provided an update on their threat assessment as of yet. Though, again, the DA did issue a standing offer to allow the family to review all of the evidence of the case within the privacy of his office. And as for the family, they held a protest near the parking garage on the day the DA announced his offer and that the names of the officers would not be released. During their protests, the family confirmed that they plan on reviewing the full SBI report at the DA's office as long as they have their lawyer present, which Genesis says will take some mental preparation on their part. The family also commented on the task force's discovery of a firearm in Adalberto's vehicle, which law enforcement was not aware of until they searched his car. Genesis says the family was not aware of Adalberto owning or carrying a firearm at that time.
He had had his, he didn't have his weapons in his possession anymore at that time. So to our knowledge, he didn't have a weapon anymore. Now, pertaining to his friends or his the people he hung around with, I can't speak on, on that. But again, you know, I did not know at this time that he had a weapon.
Now, they're still running a petition requesting the release of the officers' names, and as Genesis says, they're still hoping for a better outcome.
I feel like a lot of things have come to light in recent, you know, after my brother's situation. I feel like a lot of what they say about their training and how their training isn't, I guess, meant to enforce these protective measures kind of sounds not very good to me. It doesn't sound very safe to me. Like I said, all I can hope is that he went quick and easy and that he didn't have to suffer in those last moments and that he, you know, he didn't feel any pain and that maybe that shot to the head, you know, was the first one and he didn't have to suffer anymore.
Thank you to Genesis and the entire Espinosa Sierra family for sharing their experiences with us. And thank you to our voiceover actor, Julian Berger of WFAE, for lending his voice to tell this story. For WHQR News, I'm Aaliyah McConnell.